Aloha, Brendan.
Howdy, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is back and running. It's episode 144. That's 12 squared for the math nerds. Hi.
Nerd!
I'm not really into numerology, but I do like keep track of numerical things for the podcast, especially. I think it's really just because it's still baffling to me that we're still doing this.
Congratulations, Alan. You can count.
Well, we're coming up on the big 150. I don't
is
know.
Is that a big?
I don't know if that's that big, but it'll be like, I guess, end of July at the rate we're going. I'm sure we could figure out exactly when. I don't know if
I'm
we'll
sure
do
you
anything.
Could.
Yeah. Counting.
That's Alan's department. I'm well, more we'll the one that makes things to count.
Yeah. Owen, we'll talk a little bit about that later in the show. There's more stuff to be counted.
More things?
More things, for sure. We'll start with a thing from last week. We talked last week about the Associated Press breaking the story about the FBI and their secret fleet of spy planes. And there was a lot to be, it was a lot that was still really murky. I think partially on purpose and partially just because it was a very early story about the capabilities of those planes. There was talk about, or a lot of speculation about, you know, different kinds of cameras or cell phone grabbing technologies that have been deployed and things like that. And Wired magazine did a story talking about a helicopter that the NYPD was using as a as kind of their flagship surveillance copter. And similarly to the FBI planes, they had a special FAA clearance, and they also hid it using a shell company and an obscured tail number, so it was harder to tell where the copter was from, and so it would be harder to track. They didn't have to file flight plans or anything like that. So from a logistical point of view, it's very similar. From a surveillance technology point of view, they were looking into what the helicopter could do, and it had this fancy state-of-the-art nose-mounted camera that could be like freely rotated, and it had, you know, infrared and night sensing and other kinds of capabilities on it, and had one of the things that they had mentioned was that there was a shot that only could have been created if it were, you know, a flying helicopter, and because of airspace regulations around the Statue of Liberty, meant that shot had to be like, I think it was over half a mile away. They were saying that the camera could read license plate numbers and was sharp enough to distinguish algorithmically people's faces. So you could run it through a facial analysis thing, even at the distances and heights that it would be flying. The really disturbing thing about all this, if you aren't disturbed yet, the really disturbing thing is that this is from a report that was filed in 2003 about the capabilities of this helicopter. So if that's from 2003 and that was state of the art, that was 12 years ago. And science and technology, as evidenced by this show, often march on during the passage of time. And so these FBI planes, even if they had 2003-era technology, that sounds pretty fantastic for something that has been flying in the air unbeknownst to everyone until last week. But if it's even, say, you know, 2012 technology, 10 years later, or 2013, 10 years later technology, it's probably pretty crazy what they can put on these planes. They probably
can see the future.
Well, certainly we're seeing it as one potential future, right? We've talked about that on the show in the past, the surveillance culture, Big Brother is watching you kinds of things. It's something that we kind of has an undercurrent of the show. Not that we support Big Brother and that kind of thing, at least insofar as we'd rather Big Brother were not watching everything we do, unless they have kind of legal cause to do so.
I'd rather be like estranged brother, the one that you don't really see, maybe the occasional family reunion, maybe a holiday once a year.
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
Although, honestly, even once a year, I think is too often for...
as far as interactions with the government, it's like, sure. I'll go. Other than that, you can leave me alone.
Yeah, we pay taxes. That should be enough,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you take my money. I don't even get to see the money. I see where it goes, and I don't like it.
Right. And especially if the money is used to surveil other Americans. It's not a thing in our book. So we're still looking at stuff related to that story. It's not awesome. But it's at least out somewhat in the open. So
so now we know about it, and we still can't stop it. But at least now we know. We've taken away your ignorance.
Yeah, it's one. It's
and
one
the bliss that goes with it.
It's one thing to know about something. It's another thing to act about something. So hopefully. We inspire some people to act. I know that I still give a little money to the EFF and other organizations that combat said surveillance and warrantless actions and things like that. And it's literally, I guess it's not literally the least you could do, because the least you could do is nothing.
Yeah, knowing is half the battle.
There we go.
And also, this is in New York, and we live in California. So if you're living in New York and listening to this podcast, I'm sorry. But otherwise, I'm not going to point and laugh, but ha.
We can't see you point. It's a visual.
I wasn't pointing. Audio to be clear, I was not pointing, and that was a half-hearted ha. So that's as much as I'll do. Take that, Yankees fans. That's a failed Derek Jeter.
In other kinds of flying cameras news, I had heard about this story a while ago, and it was a Kickstarter, but I think it's now open for general sale, or at least pre-sale. It's a personal camera called the Lily, and it's meant to be an kind of sports and action camera kind of thing. It's not exactly like a GoPro, but it could be used in those kinds of situations. The novel thing about it is it's a small flying camera. It's a quadcopter with a camera built into it. And those have existed for a while, and having drones, like personal drones, is not a new thing per se. I feel like, you know, having those is something we've talked about on the show a little bit. But the interesting thing about this is it's meant to be specifically for filming yourself doing things. So you wear a little little pod that I guess has some radio transmitter in it, so the camera knows which way to point, and also the camera will do some image recognition and comparison. So if you fly it up to where you want it to be and you turn it on, it will turn towards the camera and then turn towards the transmitter, and then try to keep a similar shot. So you could like the examples they have are someone rock climbing and it hovers behind you, kind of following you up the mountain, or you can be riding a bike down a hill and it will fly and track you and keep you in the shot. And this is the example video they have is really cool, and it is pretty impressive because it's somewhat small. It's not as small as those little handheld copters that you can get for like, you know, $50. But this is, I think it's like 500-ish bucks, and I feel like that's a pre-sale price, and the actual target price they were shooting for, at least when I first heard about it, was closer to 1,000. But I think it's interesting in terms of like personal technology. In terms of what technology can do, it's kind of crazy. the part about comparing the images, you know, one to another to kind of keep a stable shot, I think is really fascinating, because that's a fair amount of computational logic in order to do that. I mean, you're programmatically comparing, you know, second to second in video on the fly, and then adjusting how the thing flies in order to follow you. That's using kind of what I would consider scary technology for good. Although it does mean that you potentially have this robot, you're paying to have this robot follow you around.
Seems kind of narcissistic.
Well, yeah.
It's like Roborazzi.
Well, if it's something that you can film just yourself with, that seems okay. But I feel like hacking this to be a like surveillance system is not that big of a stretch if it doesn't exist already.
No, this is a giant leap forward in dick pic technology. it can go up to 50 feet above you, 100 feet away, and zoom back.
yeah, it's a little wild. I think if the price were maybe half as much, I would consider getting one.
Is the first one. I mean, wait, give it 5 years and right, you'll probably have one.
Yeah, it'll probably come with my next like phone purchase.
And if anyone I know would get one, it would be Al. Because he gets the best toys.
Flying selfies? I think that's a thing.
Not a thing.
There's no selfie stick. You don't have like that issue. You just have this.
It's a selfie robot.
Yeah, you have this thing flying through the air without regard for what direction it's going, because it's looking at you instead of where it's going. Yeah,
because you're all that matters.
Yeah, it's actually like 100 times worse than a selfie stick, because a selfie stick kind of pokes other people. This thing will like chop them up. It's not okay.
Yeah. Am I wrong in thinking that we've reached a selfie saturation point?
I think so. I think so.
It's become too ubiquitous.
I think I told the story. I'm not sure if I did this on the podcast or not, but I was in an airport recently, and there was a kid kind of acting up and being loud and being really needy. And that's, you know, that's what kids are. So I'm not begrudging the parent at all for having this kid making a lot of noise. But what the parent did to quiet the kid down was the parent said, "Take a selfie." And the kid didn't have a phone, but like held his hand in front of his own face, like kind of at the distance you would take a selfie from, and then smiled and stopped like doing stuff, and then the parent took the picture of the kid at that point.
What?
Yeah.
Did you call CPS? Because you should.
Well, I was in the safe zone of the the airport, so I was just happy to be past the TSA at that point. So
should have told the TSA.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I think it was such a quick turn, right? The kid was like complaining and like half crying, and then immediately brightened up and was like smiling and yeah.
That's some scary conditioning.
Interesting Pavlovian response there. So, I don't
know.
Not a thing. So I was recently in Disney World when I went there after or during the Florida trip for work. I guess that was like 3 weeks ago, almost a month now. But when I went at a number of places in the park, Disney had made signs that say no selfie sticks. And I didn't know that was an official policy at Disneyland, but these were not like handmade signs. These were metal signs that metal painted signs that Disney had put around in the parks for different things. And so, yeah, if Disney can say no selfie sticks, I feel like you know, America can say no selfie sticks.
They're probably tired of fishing them out from underneath rides when people try and use them on the ride and then drop it.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Or, you know, there's legitimate dangers. It is like a three foot, like weirdly weighted thing, right? You know, it's as heavy as your camera is and it gets flung from, you know.
I don't know, Alan. I've never held a selfie stick.
Yeah, they're not a thing. there are a number of museums that that ban them as well because people are, as you might expect, poking the art with them because they're trying to take pictures at them. It's really terrible, actually. I think you hit the nail on the head with the like kind of super levels of narcissism involved. So yeah, don't do selfie sticks. Maybe not flying selfie robots. I think that's also not a thing.
I mean, I guess I could see some value to a professional photographer trying to shoot athletes.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, you don't need it.
I remember filming with a tape-based camcorder, filming skateboarding when I was younger. I never saw the fruits of said labor because our camera got completely trashed when I bailed into a wall. But you know, that's. That's a much cooler story than I flew my robot, you know, I think anyway.
You should fly robots into walls.
Yeah, if you flew the robot into the wall, that would actually be kind of cool footage to see, as evidenced by some footage from this year's DARPA Robotics Challenge. This year, the DARPA, which I can't remember what that stands for, it's the folks that makes that cheetah robot that we've talked about on the show. They essentially make a whole bunch of really interesting and scary technology without any kind of oversight, and then just release it when they want. And they're sort of trying to use this as a force for good, in that they made a challenge. They set out an obstacle course that a robot had to autonomously and without a tether navigate an obstacle course. And it was a bunch of things because the robots are supposed to be used for emergency search and rescue. So they have capabilities like opening a door or walking over obstacles or dealing with uneven terrain or things like that. And the footage from it is pretty fantastic. I mean, the robots that were built for this are pretty robust, and they have a lot of capabilities. But it is, and I think there was one winner. I don't know if it actually completed the course, or if it was just did the best over the amount of the course. But the reason I said flying robots into walls was because one of the videos they released from the robotics challenge is a number of robots failing quite spectacularly as they were navigating different structures and things. And some of them were they didn't even appear to be navigating. They were just like stepping off of the platforms that they were transported in on. So like the first step, they would fall down, or they were, there was one that was opening a door and it kind of just hilariously falls backwards. It's pretty good. I mean, in terms of stuff that we've put out on the podcast about robots and drones, I think it's hilarious because instead of the drones looking really super awesome and scary, these just look really ridiculous. So I would watch.
It makes me real happy.
Definitely watch this this set with as much, derive as much pleasure as you can from it, because you know, the challenge is that they are able to overcome all of these problems. So we'll see if it's a thing that becomes a story next year, that the robots don't fall down from these. But in the meantime, enjoy the video. I think it even has kind of Benny Hill style music for the robots falling down, which really, really does make my heart just like soar. It's great. Maybe you should watch that. Should we have people watch that before or after the next video we were talking about?
No. After. You want to end with something good.
Okay. All right. So the other thing that came out, and this was related to the DARPA robot that we talked about in the past. This is the cheetah robot that was meant to be kind of a load bearing, in the field kind of supporting robot. So like it's a four legged thing and can travel without a tether. It can travel completely on battery power and carry like hundreds of pounds of gear. So it's meant to be kind of a support robot. But
it's not a mindless or godless killing machine. It's the godless killing machine sidekick.
Yes. So the other capabilities of the robot is that it can run kind of ridiculously fast. It's faster than a human can run. It's something like 20 miles per hour or even faster, I think. But it does this on four legs, and they demonstrated it on like level ground, and it can flat out run you know, pretty quickly. And they added a capability just recently in which it can jump over things. And what it does is it scans in front of it for obstacles, and if it sees an obstacle that it's going to need to jump over, it will do so, but it will adjust its stride length to maximize the jump distance and height, so it doesn't have to recalibrate. Or if it sees something and it's it would have to like slow down or speed up in order to properly jump over it. So it has a bunch of different kinds of algorithms that it has to work out in order to do that, and it does it again on the fly, untethered, completely autonomously. It's very, very creepy.
Horrifying.
Yeah, keep an eye on this one, because if there's any robot to be very afraid of, it's that one. So you see, if you pair that plus the tracking thing from the Lily camera and the recognition stuff that it could be built into, you could easily see something that would be horrifically scary.
Yeah, just throw in some powerful AI and we're all dead.
Right, right. Yeah, so, yeah. Don't
so
do
watch that.
That
video first, and then watch the happy one of the robots falling down because they can't do it yet.
So in other robot news, this one is slightly less horrifying. It's
well, I'll find a way to make it horrifying.
So it comes to us from the UK. In England, there's an artist who is offering stays in a museum. So you can do an overnight stay in a museum, and that's kind of interesting because the art is meant to be, is not all like painting art or sculpture art. There's some interactive elements of the art. There's one piece of art that is actually it's a slide. It's like it's a multi-story museum, and there's a slide in the museum, and that counts as art. I love art, is what I'm trying to say. Art is good. Art is the thing. But one of the other aspects of this museum stay is that it comes with a bed because it's an overnight stay, but it's a robot bed that roams the museum. So it's the shot that I saw of it is it looks like kind of like a hospital bed. In that it has wheels and it can go in any direction, but it's motorized, so it can move on its own through the museum over the course of the evening. So you can hop on the bed and it will travel through the museum to go to the different exhibits, and you can hop off whenever you want. I'm assuming they programmed it with a path and a timing, so it operates, to get to the exhibits that the artist wanted you to see. I think that's kind of hilarious. You're experiencing the art, and you can do it when you're asleep. Like you could nap, and then you're just traveling past art. I think it's a interesting kind of way of experiencing the museum. I would like that the path repeats, so you could kind of you could be on the bed, but then like catch it when it comes around again if you get tired of walking or if you just want to experience it in a different way. I think it's a great idea.
And they could film it, just take the CCTV footage, and that is art. It's performance art.
Exactly. It has a lot of possibilities, and I think I'm not saying that like art is boring at all, but I know that it can
but
be exhausting.
Sometimes you need to lay down.
It can be a little exhausting and draining to do a whole museum, and it's an interesting way to experience it. Now, so far, I think. The beds only do this at night. I think it would be great if they did this during the day as well.
That'd be weird.
You have to make way for the robot bed kind of slowly rolling through. I think that.
Like, do you have to worry about crumbs in the bed? Can you eat in it?
I would think so. I mean,
or if you got bored, could you start watching Netflix on your tablet?
Your two-screen experience for art.
No one wants a two-screen experience. Two-screen experiences are lame.
I actually 100% agree with that. That is not a thing. I did try to do that for actually quite a few shows, I think. I tried to do it for a Walking Dead episode. I tried to do it for a Breaking Bad episode. For what's that?
What's Conan, that other Conan AMC show?
No. The Conan O'Brien show, whatever.
Conan?
Yeah, it's just Conan, right. He used to have the Tonight Show. This was ages ago, but I didn't think it had a specific name. But yeah, it's kind of fun and sort of interesting, but not enough to hold my attention. I think they overestimate how much more content we want around a show. I just find it distracting. I do like the purity of watching and doing one thing at a time.
Yeah, that's all it is a distraction.
So I think I think embracing that level of distraction, at least from the roaming around the museum aspect of it, is neat. I would rather do that than any kind of as long as the bed came with the audio tour free, I'm 100% down. I hate paying separate for the audio tour.
You're already paying £300 for a bed that you don't get to keep. Oh, wait, how do they clean? I don't. There's a lot of details I think that need to be ironed out. Not just the sheets.
Well, I think it's an interesting experiment. I'd like to see it more here. Are there any museums you would want to kind of slowly roam around on a bed?
I mean, I would do it in any museum. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. I mean, yeah, go to the Air and Space Museum in DC.
Oh my gosh, that would be pretty beautiful. I think, yeah, I was thinking of the Academy of Sciences in San Francisco. Just all the different things in that. I think it would be difficult to do that. It would be impossible to do that during the day with people. They would have to build the museum in order
now,
to.
Now, if they could do it like a after nightlife at the Academy.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing they do where it's like kind of like a club and there's drinks and yep. music.
Mm-hmm.
But then the after museum
yeah.
would be the beds rolling around. And that could be interesting.
That I think it's a missed opportunity for them. Actually.
Here's a bunch of booze and music. Here's a bunch of beds.
It does seem like a pretty natural progression. That could be a thing. I'll float it at the next member meeting or something. It'd be pretty cool.
Basically, at the next Academy of Nightlife, I'm just going to pass out afterwards.
I do like the Academy Nightlife. That is a thing. I think I've only experienced it outside of Sketchfest once, though.
I have never gone outside of Sketchfest. Like 3 years in a row at Sketchfest, but
and it's fun. Definitely thing. One thing I heard that this year is that they are making a membership to the museum that's specifically for going to nightlife. So if you want to go to the Academy of Sciences for the nightlife events, you can. There's a subscription level, membership level for the Academy of Sciences for that. I think that's a great idea because
I think if I lived in the city, I would do it.
Yeah,
but it's like an hour drive.
Right. So you need the driving beds in order to afterwards.
It'd be much more convenient for me.
Right.
I think I could enjoy the bar aspect a lot more if I didn't have to drive an hour home.
Right. This is the real use of those of the museum beds. I think we've put together a solid plan here. Yeah.
What's the museum in Amsterdam where people go and take mushrooms?
Oh, I don't know this one. You mean all of them?
yeah, that's the ones, the all of them. Yeah, put the beds there.
Yeah, I think I went to a couple museums in Amsterdam, and I think that would be all of them. Yeah. I don't think there was one specifically for that, but But yeah, that would be a good utility there too. So moving on from robots back to people and human things. There's a bit of news that you have, Brendan, for the listeners.
Yes, this week I became an ordained priest of the Church of the Latter-day Dude. I am a dudist priest.
It's funny to me every time.
It's funny to me too.
So I don't question your motives behind being a dudist priest, because I do remember a while ago looking into becoming a Pastafarian minister, and that's a thing. I am an ordained Pastafarian minister. I don't have the paperwork to back said things up, but is there a similar paperwork thing in the Church of the Latter-day Dude?
Well, the ordination process is free and online, but yeah, you can get the certificate. Mine is on its way. So I can, I looked into California's laws regarding marriage. I can now officiate weddings. So if any listeners are planning on getting married, let me know. I mean, let me know if you're getting married, or if you want me to, or to, you know, officiate your wedding.
It's a thing. I know that. So I don't know if I ever told you this, but I, Julie and I got married by our former boss. So we both worked for the college newspaper at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, and the faculty advisor kind of teacher mentor that was in charge of the newspaper was AJ Schuerman, and he's a like Shakespearean actor and just really fun guy to go drinking with, just really great guy. And he officiated our wedding, and in order to do that for the state of California, at least at the time, I think it's still the same, the you don't have to be an ordained anything. You just have to sign one form that you can download online, and you can become a deputy marriage commissioner for a day, or as long as you want. But they have a form specifically so you can, you know, just marry one set of people for the state of California. But this seems like it's complete unfettered access. Like, you could just marry anybody at anybody anytime.
Well, everyone has to consent and sign the paperwork. But yeah, no, I am a free agent. I can marry people as they need.
That's so much power.
And it's nice to be part of a religion that is just about taking it easy and abiding. And if you don't like it, well, then that's just like your opinion, man.
We definitely have to look into this. This is 100% a thing.
You can check it out. More literature at dudism.com. It's a pretty great site.
I like it.
And it doesn't say anything about performing last rites, but I feel like I could definitely take someone's ashes in a coffee can and spread it in the ocean.
Right, or into.
Into somebody's face.
Into Steve Buscemi's face.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's good. I think it still kind of fits a lot of the it hits all the high points whenever I watch.
Well, and it's a good life way to live your life. Just, you know, take it easy.
Yeah. Drink White Russians. Cool. Well, I will let you go and officiate marriages or perform less rites as you need, and I will talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.